Welcome to In the Green Room. I'm Kinga.
And I'm Chet. I hope everybody's having a great one.
Well, we are very excited here because we have all the way from Norway this beautiful
Torund Bryn.
Welcome in the green room.
Thank you.
And we are here saving the planet.
One show at a time. She's just getting started with the catchphrase. So,
but I love one show at a time. It's so amazing. But I didn't know if I should be part of the singing there in the beginning.
Of course. So we are super excited because there is so much that we have to learn from you. You've accomplished so much. And where do we get started, Chet?
Well, first, let's get a little background on Torun in her career. Like, how did it get started?
Well, I got started with working in politics. Started when I was quite young, and from there I worked in both sides of the political party. So I'm a politically agnostic person. I work for the person I believe in. So
I love that.
So that's where it all happened, and it's really there you get to know how much words, perceptions, branding, how you position yourself gets to be very, very important.
Because words can change the world.
Words can change the world, but also how you present yourself. It's just like your show, how you've been able to have such success. It's because you understand branding, you understand how to reach people, right? That's what a lot of this stuff is about.
Well, it's all about positivity and spreading love.
Yeah, but it's your authenticity.
Yes.
Your authenticity shines out. So when we were at the CVS trying to get the SDD cards for this show, you're just like yourself, and people light up and they want to know more, and they remember you, and then when you leave, they're going to look you up on Instagram, right?
Yeah, she is very social, that's for sure. Definitely no shortage on social interactions.
Well, it's a love for people that's genuine, and I love that you're shouting that out because it's true.
It is true. And it's because you've been able to tap into authenticity. Most people don't know how to do that. And so kind of what happened was I've helped with politicians, with musicians. I worked in nonprofits. And all the main theme is how do we get the word out? How do we get your mission? How do we help you become famous for what you do? And I think that's really what happens a lot. And one of the main issues that I really believe in is climate. And specifically for carbon capture and storage, which I've worked very intensely for the last
carbon
years. Capture and storage.
Storage. Wait, carbon capture
and storage. Yes.
Can you define that a little bit and dumb it down?
I will. Yes. I'm so glad you said that because that's my mission, is to dumb it down, or not really dumb it down, but make it tangible for people, because it's one of the three most important technologies that the UN says we have to do to reach the goals in Paris Accords or reach the goals set that we can turn back time and we do not have the effects of climate change that we have today. And so what is carbon capture and storage? Well, it is basically taking it and if you have too much fat, you want to get rid of the fat, right? So there's too much CO2 fat in the atmosphere, and you want to slim yourself down. And the way you slim yourself down is you capture it, and you take it, and then you return it back to where it came from. And why do I say return back to where it came
return
from?
Return it to back into
back into the seabed, back into the earth. Because we know cars, right? Cars, oil extracts, comes out from the earth, and we put into our cars, and when the cars are driving, it releases CO2, right?
Mm-hmm. And do you understand this?
Yeah, so is the focus only on CO2 or is it also on other pollutants, carbon-based pollutants like methane or, you know, different other byproducts?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah. Great question, Chet.
CO2 is definitely a bad greenhouse gas, but there's far worse. Like methane is basically one of the worst. There's other really bad ones, though. But in order to basically reverse a lot of that pollution damage, we would need to not only remove CO2 from the atmosphere, but a lot of other pollutants as well. But CO2 is definitely the main contributor because of cars and a lot of other transportation.
It's not just transportation.
Oh yeah.
No, you realize when you're making cement in the factory, cement all over the world takes 6% of all CO2 that's emitted every single year.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Just CO2. That's cement alone. So, wow. And that's factories, like producing aluminum and all these various things. So what carbon capture and storage does, which is basically returning it back where it came from, is you're taking the CO2 that's coming through the factories, you're capturing it, and you're returning it back to the earth.
Very interesting.
And what process does that?
What process?
I mean, how do you do that?
Well, that's a little bit more complicated. But what it is, you're putting it into basically what you do is you have the CO2 coming, and you basically have a factory, like a side to the factory, where they take the exhaust that's going out to the air will then be separating itself, and you separate the CO2, you liquefy the CO2, and then what you do is you
liquefying it.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
You liquefy the CO2, and then you. What they're doing in Norway, which is what a lot
which
of...
Which is where you're from.
Which is where I'm from.
Straight
is
from
where
Norway.
We're liquefying it. You are then returning it back to the seabed. And the reason why you're doing this is because you want to get as much of the CO2 out of the atmosphere and bring it back. And it's like with oil. When you're driving a car that's basing on gasoline and it's emitting the CO2, what you're doing is you took the CO2, you took the oil and gas out from the earth, and now what you're doing is all the CO2 that's a result of using the gas, we're just capturing that and bringing it back to where it came from. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the process.
And why is Europe, such as Norway, Sweden, why are you ahead of the game?
We're not really ahead.
Oh.
U.S. is groundbreaking.
Okay.
There is, it was about like 4 years ago, they did a tax credit called the 45Q, where they're giving tax credits for storing it or for making, because you can actually make products out of CO2. You can make soaps out of CO2. You can make all these various products.
That's so interesting. I didn't know it was an ingredient in all these different products.
Yes. So you can do both things. So that's what I'm so passionate about is because what happened in 2008, there was a misunderstanding of what CO2 is. People think it's dangerous, and it's not dangerous.
But
right?
Exhale it every time we breathe.
Right. But I thought in abundance, or if there's too much of it, it is dangerous.
It is, but what happens is,
I mean, not to sound corny, but we theoretically could get to like a Spaceballs point. Everybody's seen Spaceballs where they're breathing out of the cans. We could theoretically get to a tipping point where it'd be like CO2 toxicity levels. Like if our atmospheric levels of CO2 got too high, it could be like catastrophic. But we don't want to even let it get close to that point. That's why we need to start doing stuff like this now.
Right. And that's what happened with...
Thank you, Chet.
It happened in 1986 in Lake Nyos, where the lake exploded out of itself so much carbon dioxide that overnight 1,700 people died.
That's crazy.
1,700 people died. And no, I'm serious. And then 3,500.
Wait, I'm not laughing at that. I was laughing at the fact that I brought you closer.
I'm going to bring to
it. It looked like we were going to hug each other. Okay.
No, and so what's so fascinating about that is that what certain environmental organizations don't believe in carbon capture and storage because they say it's too close to oil and gas. They say it's a boondoggle.
Such as where? Give us a few examples.
A few examples? What do you mean by that?
That don't believe in it.
Greenpeace doesn't believe in it.
Oh, really?
Greenpeace and 112 other organizations didn't believe it in 2008. So they stopped.
I follow Greenpeace.
So they stopped it
really?
Because they didn't feel like it was. They've a lot of Greenpeace in certain places in the world have come back to understanding that it's an important initiative. But at that time, they didn't. And what happened was there was a misunderstanding. So public, because this video, like with YouTube, you guys are just starting on YouTube.
Just starting on YouTube. So everybody in the green room.
Yes.
YouTube. Check out our latest video with Stewart, Stewart. Horesji, Stuart Horesh, in the green room. Yeah. It's a great one.
Yes. So, but what was interesting was they didn't want it at the time. And so this is where words and imagery are so important. It's like they were associating this video around a technology that does nothing, would never happen with that technology, right? But people started panicking and protesting because they thought it was going to explode in their backyard. And it took us 15 years behind the times for us, because at this time there should have been carbon capture and storage. And what we're trying to do is try to create an infrastructure, a new market. And basically what that means is all the factories that have too much CO2, they capture the CO2. This is the vision. Capture the CO2, liquefy it, take it to your harbor. The harbor boat picks it up, takes it out into the sea, and they bring the CO2 back to where the oil and gas fields are in the ocean.
It's incredible.
Cool. Wow.
It's incredible. How long has this been taking place?
Well, there's been 15 years of attempts and research to really get to the point of where it is today. So right now they're realizing the first testing of the infrastructure in Norway. So by 2030, they're hoping that this whole infrastructure will be up and running.
Okay, so I thought we said earlier that USA, America is number one with this?
Well, USA is number one in the sense of reigniting the whole interest of it. So what happened was in 2008, it was kind of dying down. And then the 45Q, when this came, the tax credit, what happened was people started looking to it again because then there's a business reason, right? When you're getting tax incentives.
People want to make money.
Right.
And there's a money incentive now.
Right. And so then just this past week, they just introduced the Catch Act, which is taking the 45 tax credit even to a higher level. So you'll get more incentives.
And where's this taking place?
In Congress.
Right now.
Yeah, in the U.S. Congress. Yeah.
Right now. Okay. So she works in politics, so we're learning a lot here.
Yeah.
So, and we're here saving the planet.
Right. One show at a time.
One show at a time.
One more time. Saving the planet.
One show at a time.
And everybody that's listening to the show, we'd like you to follow us on Facebook in thegreenroom.green, Instagram in thegreenroom.green, and also follow our brand new YouTube channel. In the green room. It's just in the green room.
Yeah,
yes.
Perfect.
That's
in the green room.
Yeah.
So the carbon capture process, is it like an energy intensive process at all? Or is it, you know, relatively efficient?
It's a relatively energy. Takes time, takes resources, and that's where there's been a lot of research, and that's why right now we're getting to the point where we can realize.
Oh, okay, so that's why it's been, you know, a 15-year process, because they're really still streamlining it, but basically now it's like really efficient and ready to start implementing it. Okay, cool.
So we're just started with a cement factory in Norway called from Heidelberg Cement, which they're testing it out, and so they're realizing the whole. They have to basically create on the sidelines of capturing it. They have to create like different, what do you call it? Oh my gosh, I'm thinking in Norwegian right now.
Speak to us in Norwegian.
Kan ikke huske hva det var for noe på engelsk. Guri, hva skal jeg gjøre for noe?
I love it. Because this is going to go worldwide, so speak to us in Norwegian.
So anyways, but what's interesting is you have to have all this processes around the factory. It has to retrofit and has to fit to the factory. Mm-hmm. So that's why it takes a little bit more time. But it is very exciting. And because of Norway, Rotterdam is doing something. The UK is doing something. Scotland is doing something. So it's created a golden age. And the golden age really started with the 45Q in the US with this tax incentive. Because if the US can do it under Trump, then definitely other countries should be doing it.
Well, and I feel like it's a really realistic situation because some people try to be like, oh, we need to, you know, try to eliminate those factories altogether. And it's like, that's not a realistic solution, at least not for the next like 50 to 100 years or something like that. So in the meantime, we need to have some kind of solutions that are going to make those factories less polluting. Right. And this is a great solution for that.
So. Yeah, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to teach the scientists to talk about it in a more humane way, because what's hard is for people to really understand this, and that's why
I love this.
And that's
Keep going.
And that's where my passion really is, and that's what I've done with this. I'm not a scientist, but I'm someone that really sees the potential for this, and I really believe, and we have to do things for the climate. And when this can take 90% of all CO2 emitted from factories and processing industry, we should really do something about it. And so that's where my passion is. We have to ignite interest for it. Everyone knows about wind, solar, and too much plastic, but no one knows about this. And so I like to call it we're recycling CO2. We're taking the CO2 back to where it came from and try to get an interest. Because if you don't change the way you talk about something, you can't change the world. Because a lot of times people misunderstand things. And what was fascinating is we did a huge study last year for on Americans after the initial COVID. This was in July. And we were trying to understand, what is it that we can do about climate? Is there some words that we can change? And what we realized is that words like climate change is a trigger word. It triggers people not to support climate change, right? And
well, for some reason.
Well, I think that's alarming, though. I feel like, I don't know, I think that some people trying to, avoid certain words because it makes them feel a certain way. And I feel like we need to have that urgency that climate change gives us. But I agree, like, it might scare some people away, but it's a kind of a interesting, you know, argument.
I love your perspective. Although, I do speak to everybody, everywhere I go. You can see that.
Right, yes.
You everywhere speak I go. Everywhere. I speak everywhere I go.
You inspire
That's
me.
Definitely for sure.
You've got a mission in the green room. Everyone come to into the green room.
But so what word or like what phrase did you find was working better with people that they
That's
connected
a good question.
To better?
So what's interesting, the most divisive words are climate change and carbon emissions. And the reason why is they polarize things politically, right? But if we
so true.
Yeah, and so but if you just change to say reuse, repurpose, or recycle, you increase 20% more of people supporting it, which would be 90% of Americans. So what I say is you'll actually have 90% of Americans support climate change if you don't use the word climate change.
and actually,
but that's sad, though, because it's basically those people that have been programmed by – I'm not going to say which news network, but the ones that don't believe climate change are real all tend to watch a certain channel. But
you know what it is? It's something about the colorful – who understands what climate change is, right?
Well,
but
I
you
mean,
do understand repurpose. You do understand recycle and reuse. It's more tangible.
It's well, so mean, true, and it's positive because it's a solution. Honestly, I'm on the side of all about positivity, all about giving hope. And there are these extremists that come out and talk about climate action or climate change.
Well, it's an
and they
extreme
make it seem
issue.
Like,
it's
no,
an extreme
but they make
issue,
it seem like
so.
We're all going to die.
But that's not an issue anymore.
And it doesn't matter what you do, we're all going to die.
Right.
And
I mean,
so,
that's true.
No. No.
You're not immortal.
Well, of course, at some point, we're all going
to
die.
Yeah, exactly. But, so that's why we need to leave the world a better place for the next generation.
And we got to save the planet.
One show at a time. I'm like, wait. But what's interesting, okay. You're absolutely right, Chet, but what's really what you'll be happy to hear is that after decades of effort, we have finally reached a clear majority. 61% of people believe that climate change is a serious threat to the future.
Well, it's a fact that climate changes. Look at the ice age. And the
yeah, but
temperature...
at least you got a majority.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But I think it's absolutely insane that people try to claim that they don't believe in climate change when the ice age occurred. At one point, the surface of the Earth was like several hundred degrees. The climate is constantly changing. Right now, we're just accelerating it. And I just think a lot of people... like our borderline, like you were saying, basically just politicized and brainwashed and don't even think about the issue. Like climate change should not be political at all. It's just something that the earth goes through.
Right.
The climate is always changing, literally. Like,
well, that is true.
Yeah.
And that's why you need another word.
Yeah, exactly. You need to have a comprehension.
Exactly.
You can't just shut your brain off because you're hearing a certain phrase that is, you know, you've been taught.
But on that note.
On the other political side.
But on that note. I care about the ocean, and here at the studio we only have plastic. I'm not going to do.
We'll recycle it.
We'll every show we'll bring our plastic cup back because they don't have any glass here. But we love Colin at the studio. So I want to say that we love the ocean. We love our sea creatures, and we don't want it to be filled with plastic.
We don't.
But there is a solution to that. It's called start using less plastic and reduce.
Reduce is
it.
One of the words
reduce,
that she was just
reuse,
saying.
Repurpose.
Yeah, and recycle.
And when you're at the beach, pick up the trash.
Right.
I mean, it's an easy solution.
But people see that, right? And so that's why when you talk about climate change and carbon, they don't really see it. So one of the things we've worked on is like, can we create like a film where you see red air and say, this is how the carbon looks like in your air and
that's
it's too
smart.
Much. It's too much there, right? So we're trying all these different things.
Or one analogy I like to tell people, if you don't understand how lethal carbon can be, go turn your car on and sit in your garage for a few minutes.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's smart. That's smart. Well,
yeah, I'll show you how lethal carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide can be in a very short period of time.
Right.
That's a good example.
Right. No.
That's a great example.
But I just thought, personally, when you can find words that really get get to people's hearts. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Kanab, Utah. Well, COVID happened. I ended up in Utah.
Which is close to Lake Powell, an hour away.
Yes, you found that out.
I didn't know that. I did not know. So where is that? And then when she said Lake Powell, I'm like, oh, I know where it is.
But where I'm Kanab, they're very conservative, right? It's probably, what, 60% Republicans, which is kind of the party that you're thinking of is not as open to it. And they're not. But what's interesting is if you use words conservation, taking care of nature, they're all on the same side.
Oh, totally.
So what's really sad is we're using words that divide. Why don't we try to find words that unite us? So like just accept that climate change has become a word that's a trigger word. Carbon emissions has become a trigger word. And let's find words that can really bridge us together.
I love exactly what you're saying because we did a show with Stuart Haresh,
right,
a local billionaire.
Right.
A couple weeks ago. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I try to point out to everybody that comes on the show, what are you doing to make change? What are you doing to help others? What are you doing to help our planet?
Right.
And so near the end of the video or the show, I said, oh, what are you doing to save the planet? And he goes, oh, I'm not really into that. But then we kind of pulled it out of him. And if you listen to the last 25% of the show, he was like, oh, I do care about nature. And I'm doing this and this and that for nature. So he cared about nature.
Well, and he had actually like inadvertently basically set up a few different supply chain deals that ended up making the whole like global market run more efficiently. So he was basically inadvertently sustainable on accident. Just by basically trying to be economically sustainable, he was also he was saying it was when a certain chemical was banned from use in like refrigeration or something.
Freon.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was single-handedly responsible for that.
Right.
He helped supply like the replacements, and that in turn inadvertently was good for the environment. So it is interesting that sometimes people have unintentional
trigger words.
Positive impact on the environment. Well, no, I think it's exactly, but you shouldn't tiptoe. For the case of politics and getting people to come together on the same side, it is good to use the right word.
But public exactly. too, yeah. but for the public.
But had I said to Stuart, oh, do you love nature? How are you helping nature?
Everyone's going to say yes.
He would have been all about that. Oh, how much do you love the ocean? What are you doing to help the ocean? Because he has a place in Barbados.
Right. Exactly.
And he's all about the ocean and not having – he goes, oh, I don't like the plastic in my ocean and I want to clean up the ocean. See, those are –
Every American wants a cleaner, healthier, and safer planet, right?
Yes.
So if you can use those words. Now, those words come from Frank Luntz's research with the regular Americans.
And you worked for him.
Yeah, I worked for him a little bit. So what's interesting is using cleaner, healthier, and safer planet, everyone's like, oh, yeah. And then if you say, what do you do to reuse, recycle, and repurpose, right?
Exactly.
You want to repurpose things. You want to recycle. And what happens is what I've learned a lot about finding words, right? When you hear carbon capture and storage, it's like out there. You can't touch it. You can't feel it. You can't understand it, right? But when you and climate change is the same thing. Climate change, well, what does that really mean, right?
I mean, I can feel it getting hotter. I've noticed
but honestly,
it. I'm only 25.
But politically, that has negative connotations.
But
it does.
But Chet, if you just figured, if you used words every single day that could bridge people together and save the climate.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I'm just saying I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm dissecting that it's like a problematic thing in our culture that people get triggered by a certain word rather than thinking about the content.
But I think the reason why is a lot is that when people do something really, really well in the climate sphere, they don't get a pat on their shoulder. Right?
So true.
So like, for instance, when you're doing something, for instance, it's really interesting because I've been like, I've tried now for 5 years to be part of this whole carbon capture and storage.
You need to be more part of the show because we make it fun.
Yeah.
And anything that you can make fun and
include
music and excitement, it makes it fun and people want to watch
it. So 5 years ago, we didn't think it was ever going to happen. Right? No. We never thought it was going to happen. We're working like crazy to convince policymakers, people all over, to really get this momentum of going, right? And so I'm finally celebrating because I spoke at a conference this past week with the Prime Minister of Norway. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to be with the Prime Minister. I was like,
high five, girlfriend.
I was like, cool. But this is a woman that
I want to meet the Prime Minister. I'll set you up. You set me up, girl.
So okay. this was a woman, and it was the conservative political party that never really cared about carbon capture and storage, right? And so we're working so hard to get her. And then finally she's at this conference. That was like such a momentous. I couldn't sleep. I was so excited. And I couldn't really sleep because I was living on European hours this for 4 days now for this conference, right? But I was like telling my colleagues in Norway, we should celebrate. This is so exciting. And the thing I got was, no, we need to have 800 CCS installations by 2030. And I'm like, this is why people...
Baby steps, be positive.
Yeah, but this is why people lose momentum. And this is why, yes, like a word like climate change, which has really come... And it's really
negative.
Meant well. It's meant
but it's
well,
negative.
But all
it's
these
to say
organizations
it.
Like...
What, oh, it's not negative. It's
well, it's just, half my friends think when you say that, they're like, oh, you know, they half my friends don't believe in it.
It's yeah, very, no, it, I'm saying it's laughable.
They just think that it means the world is going to end, and I don't know. They
I know, so they need to like go back and retake fifth grade biology where they should have originally learned about that the world goes through climate change.
But Chad is like, we need to celebrate, and I think that's where, yes, I think that's what happened with the organizations is that
what it really is it's changing the branding on it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not that. But it's not like, for instance,
change
when I'm talking,
words and change the
yeah,
world.
But when I'm talking to all these colleagues, we've worked so hard for 5 years, and some of these people work for 15 years. I came late to the game, and I'm like, I'm celebrating, right? I'm celebrating the prime minister's there because it signifies this is their main climate objective, which it wasn't when I worked for the Norwegian government, right? And I'm like seeing this is a time to celebrate
progress,
but no one's celebrating. They're looking to the next thing. And
hello?
I think that's where you get climate fatigue.
Yes.
You get people losing interest in it. Because if we can't celebrate that we've changed a little bit, that we've changed so that now this is a priority in the Norwegian government. This
You're
is being,
amazing,
this is becoming,
by the way. Wow.
This is becoming a priority in the UK, in Rotterdam, everywhere. And we can't celebrate? Pause for a moment and say we did something. No, we have to talk about that. We have to have 800 installations by 2030. So you're making these people, these businesses. I mean, these are amazing businesses. Like the cement factory guy, I'm so impressed with him. His name is Per Brevik. He had a vision.
Oh, let's shout him out. Where is he?
Per Brevik is in Norway. He's amazing.
Let's
you should
get him
have
on
him
the
on.
Show.
He is.
Okay, will you, are
I'll
you
get
gonna,
him on. I'll
okay,
get. I'll
okay,
tell
okay,
him.
Okay.
So what's so amazing about him is he thought, I need to make my cement factory more efficient. So what did he do? He's thinking about repurposing, right? So what does he do? Instead of using gasoline and those, he's like, can I use waste instead of so I can be more energy efficient? And he did this in like 15 years ago, right? He was way ahead of the game.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
And so what Norway has some of the highest salaries in the world, right? But because he has been so energy efficient, they're not letting the factory go. It's still profitable because he found a way to be energy efficient by using waste. So he's actually using waste. I know. And so
he. How did he think this up? That's
I don't
incredible.
Know. You should have him on the show. He's fantastic.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Next week, let's fly to Norway.
Or you can have
him
on the
show. Because we can do a show there and pipe it into the Star Worldwide Networks.
Woohoo! But what was so fascinating is one man's vision, where no one really thought about it. Mm. He saved a factory of about 100 people that did not have to dislocate, leave their town that they've lived for generations, just because he thought energy efficiency with the factory.
Because he was brilliant.
He was brilliant. But the next step now is the
How
carbon
old is this guy?
He's like 55 or something like
wow.
that. Wow. And the next stage now is carbon capture and storage, because he sees if we can create this infrastructure, a whole new market where you're basically all over, that's the vision of Norway, is to inspire the world, is to take the CO2, capture it, and then return it back. But you pick up the CO2 from harbor to harbor to harbor, and you have to pay for that. Like, because CO2 has a price.
I don't understand. Pay for it. How?
Well, CO2 has a price right now. Like, there's a price point for CO2, how you can trade back and forth. And in Europe, it's much more efficient. Here in the U.S., there's like 13 states that are doing it, but it's like...
So hold on. So Europe is more efficient with it.
They're more efficient with the trading of CO2 and
okay.
understanding that. But what's interesting...
I thought I heard that in the pre-interview and then...
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
why I looked it up
okay,
for you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
But what's so fascinating is if we have a vision and we capture the vision, we're positive about it, that's when things happen, right?
Hello. That's
and
what so, the show's
and,
about.
And I think that when you, when we're looking at climate change, we should look at how can we all come together to repurpose our lives, reuse what we're doing, and recycle, right? And those are words that really work. And not only that, Americans, like for instance, the one most important thing that people are really concerned about is ensuring clean water. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's
it's like, everything. We can't live without clean water.
Right.
Hello.
I think it's also important to remember reduce in that.
Yes.
In
reduce
that
consumption.
Too. Yeah,
because
we have definitely a problem with excess here in the United States.
Being wasteful.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, if you pay attention to what I do, I have the same purse for 15 years. I keep wearing the same clothes. I do like to spend money on food. I'm a foodie. And I like wine. But outside of that, like I repurpose and reuse things. I'm not wasteful.
Right.
Even though I can afford it.
Right.
I really care about the environment. And that's one of the ways I give back. And yeah. I don't waste water.
But what's so
Chet likes to make fun of me that I don't wash my I'm like, I only wash my hair once a week, and Chet's like, that's gross. But no, it's not.
No,
my hairdresser. My hairdresser tells me not to wash
it's better
my
for
hair,
your hair.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And it takes me 30 minutes to wash my hair, and that's a lot of water. So, it's better for my hair. It's better for the environment. So I try not to waste water. And, in many ways, I try to be, I try to carpool. Whenever we're going somewhere, I'm like, oh, will you carpool? Will you carpool? Do I say that?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, you had me pick you up. So.
Evidence right there. Direct evidence.
And I was like, that's great. You know what's so beautiful is the younger generation are so concerned about the environment, which I think is beautiful.
Well, that's why I'm doing this show, because my kids, Rachel and Chet that's part of it, and Rachel is occasionally part of it, they, a long time ago, were like talking about the environment, like back when you were in like sixth grade. And they said, you need to quit being so wasteful, and you taught me to be more about the planet. So thank you.
Yeah, well, it's important. Everybody needs to do their part and start reducing and thinking for the future. I think a lot of people are too self-centered and don't think about the future generations. And we just can't do that.
Actually, that's a really good communications tactic for people that are working within this area, is to always remind about the future.
Yeah.
That's why Greta Thunberg, that younger girl from Sweden, when she was going around.
Hello. We love her.
She inspired, like, what about the future? What about me? What about my generation? And so, and that's really gotten people to think, right? We all are thinking about that. So, and there's a lot of new things that are coming out. There's something called the circular economy. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yes, of course.
But that's a really big thing over in Europe right now, where like a lot of countries now are doing reports on how circular are we. And what does circular really mean?
It's all coming back around.
It means you're repurposing everything you're using. The goal is to repurpose. Like, I'll give you a really interesting factoid. Do you know that in cars there is gold?
What?
There's electrical wiring, yeah.
Yeah, there's gold. And so if you look at the car parks that are like all these waste dumps with cars, they just let the gold stay in there.
Really?
Right?
I didn't know that.
Gold is becoming a rare resource, right? Even more and more rare. And we are not even taking care of. And think about what's in the phone. All the rare metals, right? And how are we actually reusing and repurposing all these metals? There's so many rare metals now that are in danger zones because we're not being good custodians.
And then we're just spending tons of money mining it out of the earth while we're just throwing it into landfills.
Right.
Like, it's ironic.
Right, and that's where they're really, like, in the U.S. is probably the worst in recycling. I mean,
I would agree with.
My heart breaks when I go here. And I have one garbage dump to put everything in. I'm like, I'm throwing away glass. I'm throwing away aluminum. And I'm like, all in one place, and we're not doing something with
it. Can I say, when Chet was about, how old were you last when you were in Sweden? Maybe 8?
I was like 3.
You weren't 3.
I was literally 3.
Maybe 5. 3 or 5. I don't know. But a long time ago, we were in Sweden, and he and his sister. No, you weren't 3 because then Rachel's 1. He was probably.
I'm younger.
Okay, he was probably 5.
Did you hit your head or something?
8. But I'll do the research and we'll get back to you. But we were in Sweden, and I couldn't believe it. There was no kind of recycling here in the States, none at all. And we were visiting my sister, and we stayed with her for a few weeks. And there were all these bins years ago. I mean, I mean, I don't know how old he is now, but I would say at least 18 years ago. Yeah. And there was like different colored glass, metal, plastic. I mean, she had all these bins, and everywhere you went in restaurants and public, so many different bins. And we didn't have anything like that here. Not even any recycling bin.
You still don't
bin.
Have it here.
Okay, can you help me change that?
I would love
wait,
to
wait,
change
can
that.
Can you and I change
love,
this?
I would we, love
can
to
we change
that's
the
my
world?
Vision and dream to change that. Because
okay, okay.
I'll tell you one
do
thing.
You promise me
yeah,
you're going to help
I'll
me do this?
Help you. We'll talk okay, offline okay, about okay. it. But what's fascinating okay. is like in Norway, like if you look at the plastic bottle you have there, right?
As we're drinking out of plastic.
No, no, like the plastic bottle right there, right? Mm-hmm. But so in Norway, what's so great about it is you don't feel bad about using plastic because it's all being recycled, mm-hmm. right? In the stores, you have these little boxes where you just can put the bottle in and you're getting money for it. But you're getting quite a bit of money. You're getting like a dollar. Like
incentives.
You're, and you're getting all these incentives.
Incentives.
So 90, I think it's 95 to, I think it's 95% of all plastic bottles are recycled in Norway.
But help us change that because
wow.
if homeless,
but it
if
makes,
the homeless
it people,
could like
yeah,
collect
homeless,
the plastic
yes.
bottles and get money, they
but
would
that's
be
what
doing
they do
it.
In Norway.
I know. We have to do it.
And
here.
They pick, and they, and it's so exciting because just, can you imagine just that one action? Right? That one action could transform so
in
much.
In fact, massive something that difference. Was really smart back 18, 20 years ago, I don't know how old you are now. Don't say because it'll divulge my age. So maybe 10 years ago. So we're in Sweden, and something I loved in Sweden back 10 years ago when he was, you know, a little kid. When you're at the restaurant, they charge for water. Because you know how you go to a restaurant and everybody gets water and they serve the water and nobody drinks their water? Some do, but most of you know, maybe
I didn't
half
know they
the people
did that.
Do.
That's right.
Oh, yes. It was the same price as a beer. So you order beer
wow.
or a glass of wine instead of the water because you don't want to pay for, you know, tap water.
Right, no.
But they don't waste it.
Right.
It's incredible.
But there's no incentive here locally to really recycle, right? And that's what's so sad.
But you were going to change that with me.
Okay.
We're here saving the planet.
One show
at a time.
And you were going to help us with that.
All right.
Because that yeah. it is
well,
ridiculous.
Even worse, in some cities you have to pay to recycle, and then you also see the news articles that say, oh, they're only recycling 20% of the stuff that comes in or something. So you're like, wow, I'm literally paying to only recycle 20% of this bin, and that really discourages people. So they need to make the whole system more efficient so that
right.
way there's more trust in the recycling plants and systems.
He's brilliant because that's a great point. So how do, like, I remember in Sweden my sister and her husband were so meticulous about cleaning out each this glass or this milk carton or whatever it was.
Well, yeah, that's the problem is that we're bad at recycling, so that's why they can't recycle so much because they so many people put bags in. Don't put plastic bags into the recycling. That literally screws it. I see people all the time that throw trash bags into the recycling. You can't recycle a trash bag.
So this should be taught in kindergarten.
Well, you are.
We need to go into the schools.
Right.
The fact that like less than the majority of people know that is like why we have such an inefficiency.
But people want to recycle, but they don't know how to recycle.
Yeah.
And I think that's
can
really
can we start
what,
a company that teaches?
We probably could. But it's like it's so important just to create an incentive. Like everyone in it's like a civic duty. So you have all these like public announcement. What is a civic duty? And what's really exciting is that the compost waste in Norway is used to heat up Oslo.
Stop it. Really?
Yeah. Like the compost itself can – it's like they've got this whole infrastructure. And so they need so much garbage in our waste that they import it from other countries. Both Sweden and Norway do.
Of course, I know what composting is. Chet does.
Yeah.
You do. But can we dumb it down in case somebody doesn't know what composting is?
It's basically vegetational waste.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're in your household and you want to grab your banana peel and your
yeah,
orange peel
right.
and your lemon peel, you save that.
Right, you save that.
And then what do you do with it?
And then that's when you have a system. Right? But right here, everything is so local and regional. It's hard to create a system. Of,
not really.
We
can make it happen.
Of waste management.
No, that's the problem. We don't want to make it sound difficult. We
right.
can do this.
Okay.
We can do this.
But it's one of the most important things. So because if we could just change that. And Americans do want to recycle. They just don't know how.
We got to educate. And this show's about awareness. In the Green Room needs to be everywhere. Ubiquitous.
Right. Yes.
OK. Can we say that? Ubiquitous?
Ubiquitous.
Well, yeah, that's, I think awareness is a really key word.
Yes.
Because if people start being more aware of their actions, then they'll start being less selfish. Because a lot of,
yes,
like not taking the time to rinse out a bottle, and then that screws up the whole recycling bin, that's just basically a selfish decision. You didn't take that 30
lazy
seconds.
Lazy and selfish.
Yeah, that didn't take that 30 seconds to make sure your recycling was able to be recycled. But so that's what we need to have more of an emphasis on, intention and awareness in every action you're doing.
Mindfulness.
It's, yeah, exactly. It's people that aren't having those thoughts that'll throw a straw out the window because they're just not even thinking about how their actions impact other people.
But that's how they do it in Norway. You have to continually remind people. Like, so you have like this commercials that show you how glass that you recycle.
You have commercials? We don't have that here.
Oh, you don't? Glass? No, but they'll have like infomercials. Like, so they'll have these, show you how glass can turn into this product. Aluminum that you're recycling turns into this product. You know, so it's like, it's just reminding people that waste is not waste. Waste can be a jewel. And that's why the circular economy is so important. It's like shifting our mind from not being linear. Like you're using, throwing, using, throwing.
Exactly. This is kind of my point, is that the more linear your economy, the more selfish your economy,
right,
basically. So
it's not that you're selfish. You're not aware of it.
You're right.
You're not aware of it because this came from.
I don't know. We have brains. We can think. We're not simple creatures.
Yeah, but you know how it is. You've had an economic system that is teaching you in school to be linear. It's teaching you to be linear. Like the whole economic system is based on a linear model, right? And that came right after World War II when they're creating the whole new economic system, right? So now what's happening all over the world is they're working on creating a circular system where people now are looking at everything you're doing as repurposed. So it's not like – because it used to be that a washing machine could last 10, 20 years, but now it doesn't last anymore because people are creating products not to last. But if you give an incentive for
companies – Exactly.
It's
that concept of just more, which is a selfish trait.
But it's not just selfish. It's selfish because of the people, but it's a system that's been created, and you have to break the system. And that's why so many people now are like shifting over the idea, because ideas are powerful, right? Circular economy is a powerful concept where you're going to repurpose everything. The goal is we're never going to throw away gold into our car park again, right? Can you imagine? Yeah. There's gold in these old cars that we've just left there to rot, using it.
And then that's just one resource.
That's just one, one resource that everyone knows about.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everyone knows about gold.
Oh, yeah. Think about, there's so many other kinds of metals in those cars.
Yes.
Plastics that could probably get reused.
Yeah.
So the list goes on.
What's really amazing, though, is we have a lot of people that are going to the Goodwill and shopping there and repurposing clothes.
Right.
And I know that the clothing industry is very pollutes and it's not eco-friendly.
Right, no.
And so repurposing clothes is a huge
It is a huge thing.
And recycling If you're
recycling.
Not going to wear it again, don't throw it away. Give it to Goodwill.
Rachel and Chet, my son and my daughter, they are all about going and repurposing clothes. And so that's just one small thing. But, you know, all those small things add up.
It does. And there's like this cool app in Norway. There's this cool app in Norway where you can order... You can look at old dresses from around Oslo, like where I was living, and you can see these dresses. And they're like, I like that dress. And then you can rent it.
Really?
So you can rent it from friends and
have
people.
Fun.
So you're sharing back and forth. And
Repurposing.
So a lot of young people over in Norway have committed themselves not to buy new clothes. Right?
That's what I've been doing.
It's a whole repurposing thing, right? It's creating
a
whole repurpose economy and sharing it, right? Because if there's a really fancy dress, like in the olden days in Norway, you never bought your wedding dress. You rented your wedding dress.
I love it.
Like my mom's wedding dress. Like I'd always hoped I was going to get my mom's wedding dress, but no, my mom rented it.
I love that. So I didn't even know this, but I was with a friend that's into vintage clothing and she's all into sustainability. She went to ASU, Neha. I was with her this weekend and she taught me about these street clothes, these designers that are going to the Goodwill. They're grabbing t-shirts and jeans and all kinds of clothing, redesigning them, repurposing them and selling them for like 10 times, like, you know, like a t-shirt's like $300. A jean jacket's like $600. And it's all made out of vintage. It's all sustainable.
That's great.
I don't know who can afford that, but it's pretty amazing that they're...
I think people can afford it if they want something fashionable and they know it's repurposed. It's
and timeless.
So it's, yeah. And what's kind of nice is you're doing timeless.
It's timeless.
You're being... you can still be timeless and trendy, but you're just repurposing and using the clothes.
So we have 5 more minutes. So yes. I want to... Almost 5 minutes. So I want to recap what's important. Chet, do you want to touch on...
Well, I think one thing that's been a main theme is that in order for things to be effective and to make progress, I think incentivizing both individuals and businesses is the best way to make progress. It sounded like when those businesses were incentivized to experiment with the carbon capture program, they opened up to it more. So I think we need to just think of more ways to – where we can incentivize people to recycle more on an individual basis and, have the whole system be more efficient.
So I love that.
I don't know necessarily how we're going to think of a way to incentivize those things, but I don't know. It seems like people need that initiative.
Well, I have some ideas because, like you said, you watch commercials that teach you about what all this is, how, you know, if you save this, if you repurpose this, this is doing this and it's going to save. I think if we had more commercials on, you know, how it's, we don't want to pollute the ocean and about how.
But you've done that and that's been great.
Exactly. So we can do more.
Yeah, but we have to, like, for instance, if you're thinking recycling, you're going to have a system to do it. I think a lot of people want to recycle, but they don't know how. Because there's no infrastructure and system to actually repurpose everything that's being recycled.
Yeah, that's where my point came in. Yeah. In order to get that system in place, we're going to have to think of the proper incentives so that people
will
implement
that. And what would
that
be? You're the expert. Come on, tell us.
I think the one thing is the public needs to put pressure on policymakers to really create a policy where you have to recycle. Like businesses
like
have to start
thinking. How would you do that?
Well, one thing, because everybody hates penalties. Everybody hates taxes.
But that's the best way.
Well, no, the best way would be to do it the opposite way. So every year, people would get some kind of an incentive bonus if they had been X level of clean and didn't produce a certain amount of carbon footprint.
That's a great one.
That's a great way.
Yeah, like something like that. Like, you know, so you start at $2,000 and then, you know, the more polluting you do over the year, the more is going to come out of that. And if you're a really, you know, polluting person, you're not going to get any of that stimulus. Something like that that would really incentivize people to change their behavior, like on a dramatic level. I don't know. It seems like we need something like that. I don't know.
What do you think? You're the expert. You work in politics.
Well, I think
you're
changing lives.
You're helping.
I think what's really important is to capture the imagination of the public and capture the imagination of businesses that you can actually do it. You can actually break the system. And I think that's what was really interesting in Norway, because Norway was really resistant to the whole circular
economy. Are you saying Norway?
I'm giving an example for Norway right now because it's human nature.
Are you saying Norway?
Yeah, I'm saying Norway.
Okay, you say it really
people
fast.
Get stuck in their ways. They just
they
don't want to change.
But it's like in Norway, like they didn't want to do a circular economy report. And every Scandinavian country was doing it. And they got pressure, so they had to do it this first year. So this is the first year they're creating a whole circular economy report saying how circular is Norway. And Norway is only 2.5% circular, right? But now you know where you are, and now you know where you're going to go, right? Mm-hmm. And so that came because of the public pressure. That did not come from the policymakers wanting it. It was the public saying, we're not accepting what's going on right now.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I think that's where I think a lot of the repurpose trends that are coming here in the U.S., it's the young people, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to live the way it used to be, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think by creating an awareness and creating an incentive and a vision that you can make it happen and have the public pressure, not just policymakers, but businesses. Don't buy from someone if they don't really represent what you want. That's one of the reasons why so many businesses today have a nonprofit. They're showing how they are, like the non-GMO. Before, you didn't care about non-GMO. Right now, a lot of people don't buy products that don't say non-GMO on there, right?
Sure.
So it's the same thing if you're saying, hey, I want to see on the label, hey, I want to see this company. You're
organic,
repurposing.
Non-GMO.
Yeah, but you're repurposing. Like, so for instance, if you think of Heinz bottle, those nice bottles, that Heinz could have on their label, we recycle 75% of our bottles. Or you have that locally grown, I can't remember what it was, Shamrock, or they have like those glass milk, right? And you get $2 for returning it back, right? That's the way to do it.
Incentive.
And that's why I only buy that milk, mm-hmm. because it's glass and I can recycle it, right? So I think if we as public say we're not going to buy this and we're not going to accept this anymore, just like we didn't accept Nike going overseas and having children, child labor, right? We're not going to accept you now, company, if you can't show that you are helping to recycle.
So I'm going to give a shout out to both my kids, because like if I'm hiking with them and they see trash, they have backpacks and they put it all the trash in their backpacks. And my daughter, Rachel, she only buys from eco-friendly designers that are...
Right. Eco-friendly, right?
Totally eco-friendly.
Exactly. So then now it could be circular economy friendly.
Totally.
How much are you recycling, circular recycling everything you're doing? How much are you repurposing all the machines that you're doing? How much are you doing? And that's what they're quantifying in Europe right now. They're doing reports. And if you're forcing business to have a circular economy report, how circular are you? How much are you repurposing? How much are you recycling? And how much are you reusing? And when the public says, we want that, and we're not going to buy from you if you don't you think they're going to change?
But I think they only
I agree. It really does have to come from the public wanting it. And that's why it's so important that we spread this
show. And that you send the show to everybody you know.
About it,
I'm
also,
and Colin
also
sends the show to everybody
talk about
knows.
Being mindful and yes. You know, thinking about every action you do.
Chad, I'm going to give you one last thing because this is what's really inspiring. In the 1900s, if you look at the factories before, like in the UK, they had so much smog that people were dying, right? And all of this pollution everywhere. And it wasn't until there was a public uprising that the EPA happened. Right? There was. It didn't happen until the public said, no, we're not going to have dirty air. We don't accept it. Right? But like if you think about with Churchill, they were dying and dying and dying with the smog. And was it in the 60s or 50s? Right? And it wasn't until the public said no. And if you look at the town I live in, Norway, it's basically an industrial town. And
Norway is so beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but not this part. This part is all industry.
Okay.
And so in this industrial town, it was smoggy. You could practically not breathe the air. And within 20 years, it is so clean and so beautiful, so pristine. Why? Because the public said no.
And see, and that gives you hope.
It gives you hope.
It gives you hope because things can change.
Yeah. And I think that one thing that is kind of, I don't know, it's another whole topic. We could do another whole show about
we
this.
Can do, but, oh my gosh, you're a monthly show.
I think one reason why people are a little bit slower to enact public change are our phones. Our phones are so addicting, and we're on social media so much, it kind of makes us complacent to, what's happening with nature and what's happening with climate change.
Do you think we are complacent?
I don't think so.
Or do you think you're so hard on yourself?
Well, no.
It depends on the person. I'm
right?
not.
Yeah.
No,
I
think
nature.
As a society, we're becoming a little bit complacent. Look at how many monopolies there are right now. The aviation industry, there's like three companies or four companies you can get a plane ticket from. Similar with computers, phones. A lot of industries have monopolies in them, and we are accepting of that right now. Is that complacency?
But hold on. How does that have anything to do with us spreading awareness and getting out that we have to recycle, repurpose? And reuse.
Well, exactly what I'm saying. Like how we were talking about how there's not proper efficient systems here that are in place in a lot of Europe. So it would seem that the people in Europe are a little bit more aggressive about enacting that change from the public first.
But the reason why the public is there is because they're voting with their feet, right? So the environmental parties are making such inroads. They're taking like 10 to 20% of the vote right now, mm-hmm. right? Like in Norway, it's completely turned around, upside down. So I think if we just create an awareness and a hope,
yes,
I think it's really
that's the main thing.
I think it's incentivized.
Yes.
It's incentivizing. Like I was so when I was researching on climate change, how do we make carbon capture and storage interesting and inspiring?
And
when
and positive,
I,
you have to
yeah,
make it, everything
positive.
Has to be positive.
But when I saw the pictures from the 1900s, if you go back and you look at how the smog was everywhere. And people mm-hmm. just accepted it, right? And now we don't have it. And that's what I'm talking about, celebrating progress.
Hello.
You know what? Celebrating that water is cleaner many places, right? We're taking care of our national parks, right? We're honoring the earth much more like the Navajos did many, many years ago.
I love you so much because you're pointing out the important things that there is positive change.
There is positive change.
And that makes you, you know, it's kind of like if someone tells you, oh, you know, like you're trying to lose weight and someone says, oh, you look fat. Then you're like, oh, I want to eat more. But yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't know. I think it's, you know, positivity is important, but keeping your foot on the gas for progress is important. So it's a good middle point that you have to have. I think we're about out of time, though. So this was a really fun show. This was a good time.
Such a great show. So if you have to give one last tip or one last comment, what would that be?
I think it's just be mindful of your words. You know what? I think we're in such a divisive society right now, and you could change by unifying just by one word. And it's not just within climate change. It's by being more careful on how you're using words, because I think by bridging together, we can do a lot more.
And positivity.
Yes,
and positivity.
But still call people
and spreading
out.
Love.
Just use the right words.
And spreading love. Saving the planet.
One show at a time.